And moving from New Orleans gospel to another important part of the New Orleans musical equation, Cajun music. And we have a slight change. Kevin Fontenot was not able to be with us, so our next presenter will be Patrick Huber, solo. And Patrick is an associate professor of history at Missouri University of Science and Technology. He's also the author of Linthead Stomp, The Creation of Country Music in the Piedmont South, which last year received the ARSC Award for Excellent as Best Research in Recorded Country Music for that year. If you haven't read it, you really should. Excellent, excellent book. He is also the co-author of The 1920s American Popular Culture Through History, produced in 2004, as well as liner notes for the CD collection Gastonia Gallop, Cotton Mill Songs and Hillbilly Blues, Piedmont Textile Workers on Records, Gaston County, North Carolina, 1927 to 1931. And Patrick is currently editing the Hank Williams Reader, which is a collection of more than 100 book excerpts and articles published between 1946 and 2010 that will pretty much encapsulate the Hank Williams life and legacy. And are you ready to roll?
Almost.
Okay. And Patrick is going to be talking about not actually anything from the Piedmont, but a more local topic on tracking down the first Cajun recording in a Cajun music mystery, Dr. James E. Roach, The Song of the Crocodile, and the first commercial recording of a Cajun folk song.
Thank you, Roberta. As Roberta mentioned, my friend and collaborator Kevin Fontenot had hoped to be here today to present with me, but unfortunately he is, as we speak, or maybe fortunately for him, he is rafting down the Colorado River with a group of Tulane University students on the annual Grand Canyon trip that they take, and he sends his regrets. Kevin and I first met in 2005 at the International Country Music Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, and we quickly discovered that we shared several mutual interests, including a longstanding fascination with what we've come to call a Cajun music mystery. We became interested in this mystery independently of one another after each of us ran across this July 15th, 1925 announcement in the Talking Machine World. This brief press release, which is on the handout, which carries the dateline New Orleans, July 6th, was headlined Cajun Folk Song Recorded by General Phonograph Corp. And it claimed that Dr. James F. Roach had recently made what the announcement described as, quote, the first recording of a Cajun, with Cajun, the old spelling, folk song for the OK label. The song was titled Gay Gay Solange, or Song of the Crocodile. And Dr. Roach had recorded the song 6 months earlier, on January 21st, 1925, we now know, accompanied by his wife Agnes Farrell Roach on piano at an OK field recording session in New Orleans, under the auspices of the Junius Hart Piano House, OK's regional distributor here in New Orleans. The Talking Machine World announcement identified Dr. Roach as, quote, a New Orleans non-professional who is gaining widespread reputation for amateur and radio appearances, and the announcement predicted that the commercial success of his recording of Gay Gay Solange will, quote, mean, it is believed, further experiments along the same line in the introduction of typical Cajun music and dialect lyrics to many music lovers via the Talking Machine. Looks like it fell. Have it on a stick. Mm-hmm. process easier. Technology, the bane of my existence. Sure.
Get her to silence the mic here.
So to pick up where I left off, it predicted, quote, that it meant, it is believed, further experiments along the line and the introduction of typical Cajun music and dialect lyrics to many music lovers via the talking machine, a prediction that, for reasons that will soon become apparent, proved widely off the mark. But it was this announcement that originally piqued our collective interest in Dr. Roach's recording, because it suggests that the first commercial recording of Cajun music actually occurred more than 3 years earlier than most music scholars generally recognize. Standing in front of a room full of music historians, discographers, record collectors, and archivists, I don't need to remind you, but I will anyway, that one of the essentials for the historical study of any commercial genre is a point of historical origins, particularly a first commercial recording. And from that first commercial recording, and from a workable definition of a genre, all interpretations flow. When it comes to Cajun music, scholars unanimously agree that Joe Falcone and Cleoma Brough's 1928 recording of The Waltz That Carried Me to My Grave, backed by Lafayette, which the couple had recorded for Columbia here at a session in New Orleans, ranks as the first commercial Cajun recording. So Kevin and I were intrigued by the possibility that Dr. Roach's recording might represent an even earlier example of commercially recorded Cajun music. But virtually nothing was known about Dr. Roach and his recording outside of the information found in the Talking Machine World announcement. And even more surprisingly, to our knowledge, no music scholars had spent much time seriously investigating the doctor and his potentially landmark recording. Kevin and I were not, after all, the first scholars to discover that 1925 Talking Machine World press release. In 1969, the entire announcement had been reproduced in the pages of the John Edwards Memorial Foundation Quarterly, and 3 years later, in his book Only a Miner, Studies in Recorded Coal Mining Songs, Archie Green had quoted two lines from this press release in his discussion of the Talking Machine's in the Talking Machine industry's growing awareness of American folk music. Subsequently, that press release has been reprinted on several occasions, including in the 1982 Ethnic Recordings in America, A Neglected Heritage, which was published by the Library of Congress's American Folklife Center, and in the liner notes to the 1990 Columbia Roots and Blues series anthology, Cajun Volume 1, Abbeville Breakdown, 1929 to 1939, which, it seems, should have brought Dr. Roach's obscure recording to the attention of Cajun music scholars and aficionados. But surprisingly, Dr. Roach's recording is rarely even mentioned within histories of Cajun music. How could scholars definitively credit Joe Falcone and Cleoma Brough with making the first commercial Cajun record, we wonder, without exploring the possibility that Dr. Roach had preceded the couple on record? Intrigued by this possibility and by the Talking Machine World announcement, Kevin and I began serious research on Dr. Roach and his recording in 2006. And over the course of the next 4 months, we were able to piece together the broad contours of Dr. Roach's life story, and along the way, learn a little something about this mysterious recording, Gay Gay Solengay. And what Kevin and I found surprised us. Dr. Roach, we discovered, was indeed a medical doctor, just as the Talking Machine World Press, or the press release, had claimed. He was, in fact, a surgeon. He was an 1896 graduate of the Missouri Medical College in St. Louis, which is now part of Washington University's Medical School. And he practiced medicine in the city of St. Louis for the first few years after he graduated, eventually becoming the chief surgeon at St. Joseph's Asylum there in St. Louis. During World War I, Dr. Roach served overseas in France, and following the war, he served in a medical unit that was affiliated with the American Red Cross, serving in Japan, China, and in Siberia, doing relief work in those countries. By 1925, when he made his recording, Dr. Roach and his second wife, Agnes, who was a piano teacher, were living in the 3300 block of Carondelet Street in New Orleans here, and he was employed as a surgeon at the U.S. Public Health Service Hospital located at 210 State Street, which is over near Audubon Park or near Tulane University. In our research, we also discovered that Dr. Roach was not a native of New Orleans, nor was he a native of the state of Louisiana, and in fact, he had only lived in New Orleans for 2 or 3 years at most. And Dr. Roach, we learn, was decidedly not of Acadian French ancestry. James Frederick Roach was born on May 10, 1874, in St. Louis, Missouri, and he spent the first 25 years of his life or so in that city. His family was upper middle class, they were Baptist, they were apparently of Anglo-Norman descent. His family had immigrated to the United States sometime in the mid-18th century, and he was what can best be described, at least in the U.S. context in the early 20th century, a WASP. Dr. Roach's first wife, Catherine Shotwell, with whom he eloped when he was barely out of his teens, happened to be the granddaughter of a former Confederate brigadier general and former governor of the state of Alabama. And Dr. Roach's own father, Henry Roach, was a prominent St. Louis architect who was an early opponent of bilingual education in the St. Louis public schools. In this case, the bilingual was German. More surprisingly, Kevin and I also discovered that far from being a, quote, non-professional, as described in the Talking Machine World announcement, Dr. Roach was actually a classically trained opera tenor. He was a graduate of the New England Conservatory of Boston, as was his wife Agnes, and he claimed that he had also studied music in England, France, Germany, and in Italy. Between roughly 1905 and 1907, Dr. Roach toured throughout the United States with several opera companies, most of them light or comic opera companies, but in 1906, he also toured with the Metropolitan Opera, or former Metropolitan Opera, prima donna, Eugenia Mantelli, with her own Mantellia English Grand Opera Company as the leading tenor in that company. During his operatic career, Dr. Roach claimed to have sung lead tenor roles in 32 different operas in both English and in French, but he stopped touring professionally around 1909 or so. At that time, he became an instructor in music, first at the Highland Park College of Music in Des Moines, Iowa, where he was the head or the director of the opera department, and later as the director of the voice department at Polytechnic College in Fort Worth, Texas. Then around 1915, Dr. Roach gave up his professional career as a music instructor entirely and returned to practicing medicine. But even then, however, he still continued to maintain an interest in music and to perform at recitals and concerts and eventually on the radio, including here in New Orleans in the mid-1920s, which is what probably led him to make recordings in the first place. In the process of piecing together the broad contours of Dr. Roach's life, we also learned a great deal about the song Gay Gay Solingay, which Dr. Roach recorded, as I noted, on January 21st, 1925, for the General Phonograph Corporation here in New Orleans, accompanied by his wife. The Junius Hart Piano House, where the recordings were made, or just about a block from here, a block and a half across Canal Street, And according to Ross Laird and Brian Rust's discography of OK Records, Dr. Roach may have recorded as many as three additional selections at this particular session. But the titles of these other selections are unknown, or were unknown, to the editors of that discography. Dr. Roach recorded Gay Gay Solengay. It was pressed for commercial release, but for some unknown reason, the General Phonograph Corporation's executives declined to issue Dr. Roach's recording on their flagship OK label. Of course, it's also possible that Dr. Roach's recording had always been intended as a private recording for the doctor. But whatever the case, the record was produced as a custom pressing, released on Dr. Roach's own Roach Records label and marketed presumably through the Junius Hart Piano House, for sale apparently only in the New Orleans or the immediate area. The flip side of the recording had his wife doing a 1905 Debussy song or tune, Reflections in the Water, which she had apparently recorded on what appears to be the very last day, January 23rd, 1925, of the General Phonograph Corporation's field session here in New Orleans. As best we can tell, Roach Record number 2 was issued in very small pressings, probably only a few hundred at most. And as a result, the recording is extremely rare today. The late J.R.T. Davies once estimated that there were probably fewer than 6 of these recordings still in existence today. Fortunately, through 78 listserv, Kevin and I were able to locate a recording of this particular record, located of all places in Riga, Latvia. We have not actually heard the recording, but the record collector who owns it, Benno Huppel, who I'm sure many of you in this room know or know of his name, wrote to me and told me that despite the title being in French, that Dr. Roach sings the song in English, and it is what Mr. Huppel describes as, quote, a trained tenor with a classical piano backing it. Mr. Huppel purchased the record in 1982. In fact, he purchased it from John Davies as part of his collection for his forthcoming Cajun music discography. And he has promised to send us a copy. And despite the fact of that promise, and for reasons that are too complicated to go into here now, unfortunately, I am not able to play you a copy of that recording. I know. So you will have to take a poor substitute, which is a 1950 recording that Adelaide Van Way did for the Folkways label for an album called All Day Singing, Louisiana and Smoky Mountain Ballads. This is also done in a formal concert style, except one of the major differences is that Van Way sings in French. So here's a snippet of that.
Gay, gay, so I'm gay.
Well, what we've learned about Dr. Roach's past raises the intriguing question of how does a waspy St. Louis surgeon and opera tenor learn a Cajun folk song? And although it's possible that he learned this song from tradition while he was living here in New Orleans, based upon research that our friend Ryan Brousseau has done, it appears almost certainly that Dr. Roach learned the song directly from Mina Monroe's 1921 collection, Bayou Ballads, 12 folk songs from Louisiana. Monroe's book contains the lyrics for Gay Gay Solange in both French and in English, and the music is scored for piano accompaniment. Monroe's book became popular among concert singers like Dr. Roach himself, who wished to include some American folk songs in their otherwise classically oriented concerts and recitals. And Monroe herself expressed her wish in her introduction that the songs that she had collected in the book she hoped would prove, quote, suitable and attractive for concert singers and thus would bring them to the attention of a wider circle of music lovers. Above and beyond that is the fact that Mina Monroe's Bayou Ballads is the only collection of songs that contains Gay Gay Solange before, that was published before Dr. Roach's 1925 recording. Gay Gay Solange, which roughly translates to Dreamland Opens Here, is a children's lullaby. It paints this fantastic world of talking turtles and singing alligators. And it is an authentic Louisiana folk song in the strictest sense of that term. But despite the fact that the Talking Machine world billed this as a, quote, Cajun folk song, Gay Gay Solange is actually from an Afro-Creole tradition, not from a Cajun tradition. Mina Monroe had learned the song and recalled hearing it as a child growing up on her grandmother's plantation, where she, quote, learned the song from the Afro-Creole domestics who worked on her grandmother's plantation in St. Charles Parish, which is about 30 miles west of downtown New Orleans. And in Bayou Ballads, Mina Monroe provided the lyrics to the song in the original Creole patois, as well as in the French and in the English translations. This song appears to have been popular among Afro-Creoles in New Orleans and in the surrounding parishes. It appears to have been popular around the turn of the century, and it appeared in Creole folk song programs, in Creole folk song programs in the state as late as the 1970s. Dr. Roach's recording is apparently the first recording, commercial recording of this, but in the years since 1925, it's been recorded at least five other times, including a version by the Kingston Trio in 1959. But Gay Gay Solange itself is unknown in the Cajun music tradition, both in the 1920s when Roach recorded it, as well as now. So I apologize for a long setup with so little payoff. You are right, Chris. Our research into the life of the mysterious Dr. Roach reveals that he was not Cajun, that his intriguing, little-known recording of Gay Gay Solange cannot really, by any sensible definition, be considered a Cajun recording. And so those honors belong to Joe Falcone and Cleoma Bro. But I would point out that Cajun scholars, although they had it right, they apparently had it right all along, largely because of their intellectual indifference and their lack of curiosity. I hope I'm not being too hard on them. Well, dead ends in historical research are important, although frustrating, of course. And our research into this project was not without bearing some fruit. Just a couple of months ago, while I was in New Orleans attending another conference, Kevin and I made two what we consider significant discoveries as part of our Cajun music mystery. First, using an internet newspaper archive, we located this announcement that appeared in the New Orleans Times-Picayune in January of 1925, announcing the General Phonograph Corporation's recording session and highlighting Dr. Roach, which I don't know if you can read that, but it talks about him recording Gay, Gay, Soul, and Gay, as well as another song that it describes as an old bayou ballad, which translated into the English as Pity Poor Mamselle Zizi, and a pair of untitled selections described as two Sicilian love songs. Interestingly, I'd point out that the other bayou ballad, the Pity Poor Mamselle Zizi, also appears in Mina Monroe's Bayou Ballads collection. And in fact, it's the song that precedes Gay, Gay, Soul, and Gay. And so this newly discovered information that Kevin and I uncover takes us one step closer to filling in some of the gaps in Dr. Roach's sessionography that's found in Laird and Rust's discography of OK Records. And you'll also note that this particular article pins down the recording date of Dr. Roach's record, of his recording, which previously had not been known either, noting that he recorded yesterday, making the date January 21st, 1925, the very first day of the session. Well, only about 10 minutes later, Kevin and I made what was an even more important discovery, and again, at least to us, when we ran across this article in the Times-Picayune for July 17th, which is an advertisement for Dr. Roach's recordings. It provides the full titles of all of Dr. Roach's commercial releases from this particular session. And based upon this information, it appears that at the January 1925 session, Dr. Roach recorded not three additional selections, as Laird and Rust have it, in addition to Gay, Gay, Soul, and Gay, but he actually recorded five additional ones. The two Italian love songs that you see on the left, the two songs that are described as American ballads or love songs in the lower right-hand corner, plus the old bayou ballad that's not listed here, the Pity Poor Mamselle Zizi. So Dr. Roach released not one commercial record, not two, as was previously thought, but now it appears three. Of course, we don't know on what the couplings were on these two, Roach record number one and Roach record number three, nor have either of these recordings ever turned up as far as we can tell. Also, finally, I'd point out that this ad also confirms Ryan Brazeau's speculation that the song came from Mina Monroe's Bayou Ballads, because as it points out in the upper right-hand corner, from Bayou Ballads, describing the song as an old Louisiana bayou lullaby sung by the Mamas first in French and later in English and probably over 200 years in age. Well, despite these discoveries, one part of the Cajun music mystery remains, namely, why did the 1925 Talking Machine World announcement describe Dr. Roach's recording as a Cajun folk song? Presumably, this particular press release was written by a salesperson who worked in the Junius Hart Piano House. Probably was not written by Dr. Roach. Dr. Roach, even though he was an outsider, knew where the songs came from Mina Monroe's booklet, and probably would not have made that mistake. Probably, I say. So why is a Creole, Afro-Creole song described as a Cajun song? Well, Creole is a troublesome word, as many of you know, in Louisiana, where its definition and its usage spark intense debate still to today. During the 1920s, there were two groups primarily that called themselves Creole. One was an elite white urban group of French ancestry, and the other was a mixed heritage group, also usually city dwellers, of both African and French ancestry. Neither of these groups consider the other true Creoles, And both of these groups looked with a great deal of indifference on Creoles of any sort of rural Creoles. And perhaps the author of the press release wished to avoid this controversy, or perhaps he wished to remove any possible taint that might arise from a respectable concert singer performing a song of African-American origin. Or perhaps he saw this as a marketing opportunity to appeal to the large Cajun population in southwestern Louisiana. Cajun, of course, was itself a derogatory term, and for many outsiders, it was a term that was unfamiliar and confusing. This advertisement from the 1923 film Scars of Jealousy, for example, describes this motion picture as, quote, "the story of an uncouth boy, a despised Cajun, a hillbilly taken from the hills of Kentucky, or from the Kentucky hills, and given the place of a rich man's son in the home of a southern aristocrat." Well, from the Talking Machine World description, however, it's obvious that whoever wrote this press release was attempting to play upon the quaint or the exotic qualities of Cajuns, this sort of folk image of them that had been circulating since the late 19th century as a result largely of the writings of people like George Washington Cable and Kate Chopin. But in the end, the conflation of the terms Cajun and Creole in this Talking Machine World press release may have simply been a mistake. In any event, this piece of the mystery remains, and I look forward to your conjecture about what you may think is the reason why this is billed as a Cajun folk song. Thank you very much.
We have time for a few quick questions, though if any of you are Tom Aswell, if you could please come up to the front. Oh. Okay, we may have a lot of time for questions, so...
Kurt?
I think I've got one of the vocal records.
Oh, you do?
But aside from that, the Afro-Creole
Afro
vocal thing, I don't know what the actual translation from the French Solanier is, but crocodiles not found in Louisiana.
No.
Crocodiles were found in Africa. We have alligators here. So that may have, maybe that song came from Africa originally.
It could very well. I will. I'll send you, Kurt, the lyrics if you'd like to see them. But I would appreciate it if you looked.
Is anybody here that speaks French? Is Solanier translated as alligator or crocodile?
Get back to the
question.
It's crocodile, and the French, or at least the Creole French, is I think crocodile, and it's an alligator. So I think that's where the crocodile might come in. Van Way recorded a version of it as well. The Bayou Ballads. Same for Gay Gay Selling Gay. She collected them or remembered them from her youth in St. Charles Parish, just west of here. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Question in the back?
Solanier isn't, but Mamzelle Zizi may be. I mean, some of his collection came from St. Charles Parish. Yes.
Other questions for Patrick?
Right here.
not the Talking Machine World? Oh, it was not on that. It was not listed. Apparently it was not released, as far as we can tell. The one that was listed was his wife's piano solo, the Debussy piece, Reflections on the Water. Yes. No, you mean studying this independently of us? No. No, and Ryan Bresso, to give him credit, is the one that really made the breakthrough with locating the source for Gay, Gay, Soul, and Gay. And Kevin and I really did the other work, the biographical work on Roach himself, and then finding the announcements in the New Orleans papers. So.
Okay, Bill?
Oh, that is the cover. And the reason for that is because the record collector in question did not want us to use the full color image. So that was the scan that he sent us. He wants to be able to publish the full color, complete label himself. It's the record sleeve. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No. That's correct. If any collector has it and they live closer than Riga, Latvia, we'd be more than happy to. We would appreciate their assistance.
And
well, he came about to get us a copy for this particular presentation. He came up with what has to be the most difficult possible solution to getting us a playable copy, as he wanted to send us his record by courier to the United States, and we would pay the charges and have it duplicated here and then send it back by courier to him. So, I mean, I appreciate his generosity, but I did not want to take responsibility for the record. No. Yeah. On the flip side is Agnes Farrell Roach's piano solo. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uncle Dave.
And that's one thing that Kevin and I are very much interested in is these custom pressings, but nobody seems to know much about how big the runs were.
Any other questions? Yes.
That's a point well taken.
Mm-hmm. Well, disappointing that we can't hear from Tom Aswell, but this will give us more time to get to the record release party at the Louisiana Music Factory, 210 Decatur Street. Leave the hotel, head that way, and stop on the street before you get to the river. Hope to see you all there.